Trust me, I need the light today. How are you doing? Good. Really? I mean, how are you doing, I wonder?
Very well.
Good! I'm pleased to hear it. I'm asking the question, how content are you with your life's circumstances? How content are you with your home, your career, your job, your retirement, your interests, your health, your friends, your family, your body, your looks? How content are you? Because we live in a world where an awful lot of people are not at all always content. Well, actually, a recent survey suggested that the British in particular aren't doing too badly in that particular area. A survey was carried out recently and the researchers asked a number of questions. They asked, how satisfied are you with your life nowadays? To what extent do you feel the things you do in your life are worthwhile? How happy did you feel yesterday? It's very specific. And how anxious did you feel yesterday? And interestingly, despite the kind of economic woes that we have in this nation, 4 out of every 5 people that were asked in Britain said that they were satisfied with their lives. And a little bit less than that, 3 out of every 4 suggested that their lives were worthwhile. So actually Britain, in terms of the league tables, is not doing too badly. We're amongst a whole band of countries that are just below the Nordic countries, who always seem to do really well on these kind of happiness polls. I don't know why that is. Why are people from Scandinavia so happy? Is it because it's so cold up there, they're just happy to be alive? Some more interesting stats. Young people are happy until a certain kind of dejection descends upon them in the middle of life. We call it the midlife crisis, don't we? Good luck with that one, Adam.
Thank you very much.
But the good news is that the gloom lifts again as we approach retirement. So keep smiling. It gets better. Maybe that's because that's when you finally say goodbye to the children and you have a bit less responsibility, I don't know. Oldsters who are reasonably healthy are just as satisfied as youngsters. Though Londoners are more stressed than people living anywhere else in the country. And having been on Oxford Street and battling the crowds on Thursday evening, I really understand that. Couldn't wait to get out of there. But that means that there are certain traits that are developing, and developing all over the world according to this survey. Around the world, did you realise that more and more people are moving to the cities? We call it urbanisation. And they're doing that because they hope that they'll have better prospects. They'll earn more money, they'll have more fun. And one of the other interesting observations, particularly in this country, is people are less satisfied with their looks. Again, last year there were record numbers of people going through surgical procedures because of dissatisfaction of body image. Breast enlargements were at the top of the list. That's all about image. But nips and tucks of nose and eyelids and face and neck were close behind. And interestingly, the biggest increase in procedures is in, did you say liposuction or liposuction? Which is the American one, I'm not sure. Whichever one of those it is, that's the biggest increase, apparently, in this country. Lots and lots of people are not content. content? How content are you? The reason that we're thinking about this is that we've been asking the question recently, what characterizes a mature Christian life? What are the things that we should look out for that speak about a mature Christian faith? And in our last 4 weeks, we've looked at some of the themes that came out of our discussion of this subject when we were at the school just over a month ago. We came up with 5 themes that we ought to look at. And this is the final one tonight. Today, we're going to look at contentment. What it is to have that life of contentment that should characterize the Christian life. Well, I can't think of a better way, a better place in the Bible to look to gain a biblical perspective on this than the passage that Margaret has just read to us. Paul speaking to the Philippian church. Because Paul was a man who knew a thing or two about life being challenging. And yet, he was the man who could begin this passage using this word, which actually was a key note of the whole of the letter that he was writing. He was rejoicing. Rejoicing greatly. What was he rejoicing about? Well, he's rejoicing because he's just been given a gift. He's received a gift from the church. And you might say to me, well, what's the big deal? We all rejoice when we get gifts, don't we? I had a gift yesterday. 2 people came round. David and Ryder. It was lovely to see them. And they brought a gift. They brought an old lady with them. I hadn't seen an old lady for a really long time. So I got it to pose and I took some photographs. And then I released the old lady and David and Ryder went on their way. And in case you haven't guessed, an old lady is a type of moth that I was photographing. They gave me a gift. And I was rejoicing because of it. So Paul is rejoicing at this gift. But you may think that he's just rejoicing because of what it means to him to have this thing. That's not the case. Let me explain why there is rejoicing. I need to say something about Paul. He's this traveling evangelist. He's the apostle that God has specifically appointed to go out from Jerusalem, from Judea, and to share this message of good news of Jesus. And he's doing this pretty much on his own. So he's traveling throughout Asia, and he's supporting himself in that practice by making tents. And he makes clear that it's not easy. In verse 15 of the passage we read, that since he's left Macedonia, that not one of the churches had helped him in his venture to go out. And he's representing the churches, he's representing God in what he's doing, with the exception of the Philippians. And he's not heard from them for such a long time until this gift had arrived. So verse 10, we read, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Does it sound like he's having a go at it? At last you've sent a gift. Is he really criticizing? Do you know he's not? That's the last thing that he's doing. Notice he says he's rejoicing in the Lord. Not in having this gift, not having this pot of money with which he can go to Rome and buy the latest pair of designer sandals. He's rejoicing in the Lord. Specifically, that the Lord is providing for him. And he's doing so through these people in the church, these Philippians. He's rejoicing that what's supposed to happen is actually happening. What is the church doing? The church is doing nothing less than it's supposed to. What the church and what people are supposed to do When we're in something together, when we're about a project, we support one another to get the job done. As we as a church were trying to support the school when it had its fair recently. It's the same principle. But this is what God expects of his people. And Paul knew that the God he had come to trust and rely on would provide for his needs. And he's rejoicing in the Lord. Did you notice? He doesn't actually say he's rejoicing in thanking them specifically. He's not actually thanking the church. He's rejoicing in the Lord that things are happening as they are. It's what he describes in verse 15 as the matter of giving and receiving. It is a part of what is supposed to happen. That's what he's rejoicing in. So when he says, at last you've renewed your concern for me, he's not being critical. One of the things that Paul has discovered is he's recognised that through this gift, the Philippians were not actually slow to send their gift. They weren't able to send their gift. So in the following words, he says, you have been concerned, but you've had no opportunity to show it. He's not being critical. And then very quickly, he goes on to just make absolutely clear they don't misunderstand why it is that he's writing about this gift. In verse 11, he says, I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. What he's doing is he's stressing that his joy is in the gift from the Philippians. Not because he was in dire straits at the time when he received it, but because he saw in this an act of generosity, an act of self-sacrificial love towards him from these people. In verse 18, he refers to it, therefore, as being a fragrant offering. And it's what he'd come to expect of God, that God would supply his needs, and the church is the means by which he's going to do that. So he tries to teach them this lesson. And he goes on in verse 18 to say that God will meet all of your needs. And this gets to the very heart of why this man can be so content with his life. Having cleared all of that up, he now shares with them what I believe is one of the greatest lessons that any human being can learn in life. The lesson of being content, whatever your circumstances, whatever befalls you. It's a lesson that so many people have not learnt today. Just think about finances. It's very interesting talking to people and listening to what people say about their income and what will satisfy. Speak to someone who earns £10,000 a year and they'll say, if I just had £15,000 or £20,000, it would make all the difference and lots of things would fall into place. Talk to someone who's got £20,000 a year as an income and they'll say, yes, but if I just had £30,000, it would take away all these stresses and life would fall into place. Someone has £30,000. If I just had 40, though, or £50,000, yes, but if I just had 60 or 70, then I could do these things and all of these things would fall into place. And I wouldn't be surprised if the person who has an income of £1 million would say, if I just had £2 million. So how much is enough money? Well, I can tell you exactly how much is enough money. It's just a little bit more if you're not content with what you have already. When we read what Paul says, we understand that he has a very different way of looking at the whole of life
and about the way that God provides for him in that life. Please, have your way. Go on a nice trip. Don't mind us. Take your exhaust off if you like. Make it a bit louder. Sorry, I must be content. And so we read what Paul says on the subject. And in verses 12 and 13, these words that should be a real challenge to us. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. Paul has known hardships, like you and I will never know. You may believe that you've had a tough life and you've been through some real challenges, and I don't doubt that for a second, but I believe Paul truly understood what a challenge was. Let me spell a few out. Hunger. The Bible tells us that this man had known hunger, probably times when, as he's on his business, he simply just didn't have enough money to pay for the food at the end of the day. Paul had sleepless nights, we're told, on his travels, undoubtedly, at prayer, probably mulling over some of the problems that arose in the church. Paul experienced ill health. He knew disappointments. He was deserted by Demas and others at his trial. He knew rejection. He was shipwrecked 3 times. We read in the scriptures that he was spent a day and a night in the deep. I don't know what that means, but it's probably pretty horrendous. I've only once ever spent 2 or 3 hours stuck at night, having capsized in a kayak that couldn't be righted in the middle of Lake Malawi in Africa. That was pretty frightening. That was a warm atmosphere, but the water makes you cold and you really begin to wonder, are you going to get out of this? He knew persecution. He was hated by those who were opposed to Christianity. He was the personal object of violence and riots in Antioch, in Thessalonica, in Berea, in Corinth, in Ephesus, and in Jerusalem. Paul was beaten, the Bible tells us, unnumbered times, sometimes with rods, sometimes with stones. 5 times he received the 39 lashes from the Roman authorities. He was imprisoned. He was imprisoned for at least 2 years after he was arrested in Jerusalem. And yet this is the Paul who says, I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. And in case you're not absolutely clear on that, let me make something else clear. He's writing this from prison. Not a nice modern prison with a TV set and a gym and all the other things that are present even in what I would consider to be a horrendous prison system in this country. But he's probably in a dark, stinking, rat-infested place. A place of abuse, of violence, of hunger. And it wouldn't be too long before he would go to the ultimate extent of losing his life. And yet, Paul could write these words about knowing the secret of being content. No matter what his circumstances, he'd learned to be content, to be satisfied, if you like, to be self-reliant, self-sufficient, in the sense of being independent of external circumstances. And I need to qualify that. See, he's using a word for a good reason. Because in Greek culture, this word that he's used speaks of this self-sufficiency that was something that the Greeks were quite proud of. Greek philosophy meant that people would be proud of being self-sufficient. But the difference was that Paul's self-sufficiency was not a self-sufficiency, was not a contentment in pride. It was a contentment of faith. He turned self-sufficiency into Christ-sufficiency. He was content because he recognized he could rely on his God for all of this. And so he ends that section that he's speaking about with this much quoted and often misused verse, "I can do everything through him who gives me strength." It is misused. What does he mean by it? He didn't mean that nothing was beyond his power. You've got to read this in its context. What he's saying is, the context is that he's just been through, just explaining that he's had times of hunger and he's endured them. He's had times of persecution and he's endured them. He knows what it is to struggle. And in that context, he's saying, I can go through anything. I can endure anything. Need, plenty, hunger, being well fed, through absolute confidence in his Lord. To provide strength to cope with hunger. To provide strength to cope with sadness. To provide the strength to cope with the pain of life. To find the strength to cope with disappointment. To cope with rejection. To cope with accusation. To cope with persecution. In his Lord, he has the strength to cope, to endure with all those things. So this verse doesn't mean that God will bless whatever a person does. That's prosperity gospel. And if you understand anything about what Paul's life is, surely you can't continue to believe in this prosperity gospel that some speak about. On the contrary, he's saying he's a person who's learned to face anything in the strength that Christ provides. What Paul had come to understand was that God was sovereign. And nothing happens without God being fully aware of it. But he knew that in those things, God was his provider. One of the names of God that we looked at last year was Yahweh Jireh, or Jireh, as we often say. God the provider. God who was all sufficient. This is the God he'd come to understand. He'd come to understand that his God was the God of love, the God of compassion, the God who's promised never to abandon, never to reject, never to harm a person. Paul knew that he could be fully trusted in all of these areas. And therefore, whatever the circumstances he went through, he could see that if it was okay with God to go through that, then why would it not be okay for him? If he could trust that God would take care of him, would provide, if God was willing for him to endure the hardships he was about to face, who was he to challenge God's plan for his life? What a perspective to take. I wonder, when we go through some of the challenges, when we face health situations, then we struggle to get by them, what's our response? To complain at our lot? To complain at what's happening? Or I wonder whether we can begin to see, as Paul can, that if God is with him, he can endure. Not only that, he can actually embrace it. Paul said to the church at this time, he said, not only rejoice, but actually to consider it pure joy when you are persecuted. Can you imagine someone saying that? Consider it pure joy. But what Paul knew was that it's in those times of hardship and challenge and persecution that we learn to dig deeper. We learn who our God is. We learn to stand by him, to trust him. We learn the patience that forms the character, that gives us the hope, that gives us the insights to who God is, that gives us his perspective instead of ours. We stop looking what other people have in the world, and we start to recognize we have something that's so much bigger, and it is God. And if God is willing to accept that we go through these things, can we not struggle to accept the same? Don't get me wrong. I know that it is sometimes very difficult, sometimes quite painful, to go through some of the things that we have. And none of us likes to get older. I struggle to be content with the fact that my eyes don't do what my eyes used to do, which is why I'm wearing glasses. You, as a congregation, have been a real headache to me this week. Literally. Let me explain. I was told I shouldn't peer over the top of my reading glasses. It's not good. So I've been staring at you through my reading glasses. I haven't been able to see Dickie Bird. You couldn't have all been asleep and I wouldn't have known any different. I can only see and focus what's right in front of me. So I was encouraged, and because my eyes were getting worse, to get new glasses. So, new glasses. Now I can see when you're nodding off. Be warned. But I was encouraged to get varifocals. What kind of torturing individual invented varifocals? If I've been stammering and stuttering and trying to find my place, it's because I can't see much in front of me. Where is that tiny little bit that's in focus? It's almost impossible. I could have been saying anything to you this morning. I find it difficult to be content that my eyes are not as they are. But you know what? God is so much bigger than my eyesight being slightly dubious. Read the testimonies of people like Johnny Erickson, who in a diving accident broke her neck and found fulfillment in life through her relationship with God that she couldn't have imagined before the accident happened. I'm not trying to belittle the hardships that people go through. And my eyesight sounds like a pathetic thing, but it's just a relevant example. I'm not trying to belittle, but the challenge is to be content in the circumstances that we have. And then we sometimes worry that things haven't quite worked out as we might have hoped, that maybe our status in life isn't what it could be. Do you know, Paul knew that his status in this world was not determined by people or things, and he should know. This man was as educated as it was possible to be. He held a position of authority and respect in Jewish culture. He was a Roman citizen, and in the book of Philippians, he said, as he understood his relationship with God to grow, that he considered all of that rubbish. It's the word he used, rubbish. Actually, the word is even more than that, but I can't say it in nice company. Utter garbage compared to what it is to know God. And this is why Paul could be content. He knew who he was before God. Eternally saved, loved, cherished, called a child of God, adopted as his son on equal status with Jesus. So all the trappings that the world might suggest are so important, he didn't worry about. He didn't feel anxious about, because he could see that those were just extras, and he could take it or leave it. I can do anything through him who gives me strength. You will face challenges in this world. Life will not work out exactly as you hope it will. I want to suggest to you, if you want to get through this life with contentment, that will bring joy, that will remove bitterness and frustration, the only way to do it is to do so in the strength that God provides. The strength to cope with whatever. The strength to see things through his eyes and not the eyes of the world. Let's pray.